Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Lisa Smozarski, Editor-in-Chief of Stylist.
And I'm Alex Walker, Editor-at-Large.
And together, we are your brand new work wives. Consider us the background noise to your PowerPoint presentation.
The support you might need to get through a working day.
Or the distraction.
Yep, definitely that.
Welcome to Working From Home with Stylist. Coming up in today's episode, Anna Whitehouse, aka Mother Pucker, shares her thoughts on why we should all be fighting for flexible working forever.
Katie Piper is sharing her self-discovery podcast recommendations to help you through this next phase of lockdown.
We are talking all things energy, or rather the lack of it, and how to give your energy levels a much needed boost.
And author Maggie O'Farrell will be sharing her advice on how she makes working from home work for her.
One of the big stories for me over this past week or so has been this move to enshrine working from home in law as a right for all of us after this period where it's being enforced upon us. And actually, you know, so many people have been campaigning for flexible working, for the ability to work in a different way for so long. It seems the pandemic is the thing that might actually push that over the line and change how we work forever.
That's true. When you see a massive company like Twitter say outright that they don't expect any of their team to ever work in an office or ever to be forced to work in an office ever again.
Yeah, they'll keep their office open, but it's your choice to work from home.
That just shows such a huge monumental change in the working culture. And we've seen how it can work. We've seen the benefits for so many people from working like this. We've seen not having to factor into a commute into your day, the benefit that can bring both the employer and you. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the work culture looks like 12 months from now.
Definitely. I mean, this has been my first ever experience of working from home. And we started this podcast because we were worried about that experience. We suddenly had our offices taken away from us. Now, I'm not sure I would choose to work on my own all the time forever, but there have been a huge amount of benefits to me in terms of being able to be more flexible, trying to work around my family. But of course, you know, this isn't just about parents versus non-parents. There are absolute proven benefits in productivity, in output, in motivation, in anxiety levels for people who have the option to work from home as and when they need to. And I think we're all fast-tracked into making that work. So many businesses for so long have talked about, well, we can't do that. We need to have people together. Well, actually, now we've proven over the last couple of months that you can still keep businesses going whilst working from home.
It feels so outdated, this idea of 9 till 6. Every person must start at the exact same time and finish at the exact same time. Because, of course, people work really differently. I know I'm really good in the morning. Ideally, I'd start work really early. And from 4 o'clock, I am, there's no point of me. There's no point me sitting at a desk because I've really lost energy by that point. So allowing people to work around their own personalities, their schedules, their hobbies, and actually allowing them to have a proper work-life balance. It's been shown how good it is for people. And I really hope one thing we can take from this period is that work can be work from home. It doesn't have to mean that you're shirking from home. It's a really valuable way to work.
Absolutely. And one of the people who's celebrating this move is Anna Whitehouse, aka Mother Pucker. And she is an author, presenter, but most importantly in the context of this conversation, a campaigner behind the Flex Appeal movement. And she's been campaigning for the last year or two about flexible working for all. So I think if anyone heard a large woohoo when it was announced that this could well become law, then that will have been Anna Whitehouse. And here's what she had to say when I spoke to her about it. Hi, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us today. We obviously want to talk about flexible working a bit more. And as someone who has pioneered a big campaign through Flex Appeal, we definitely wanted to get your opinion on some of the new developments. Obviously, there has been a shift in the conversation around the law and the possibility that working from home might be enshrined in the future. Can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to say is that enforced remote working that we're currently in is not effective flexible working. But what it has done on a legal level, and I think on a human level, is open up the conversation around what can we do post-lockdown to ensure that this momentum continues of flexibility in terms of working anywhere and everywhere. And that is what the talks are happening at the moment in Whitehall about. And putting the onus on the employer to prove that a job cannot be done remotely. So if I put in a flexible working request or a remote working request to you, you have to prove from a business perspective that I cannot do that job anywhere but in that office. The people who wouldn't basically come under this law would perhaps be scientists who would need a lab, you know. But if, for example, as a journalist, I said I would like to work 2 or 3 days from home, it's now been proven it's possible on a tech level. The employer cannot say no to me because I can take my laptop and I can do my job from home. So the current legislation that's being pushed through Whitehall at the moment is really centred on shifting the narrative from it being on the employee's perspective, from us having to prove that we can work. And I think the business reasons for declining any kind of request pre-lockdown were completely set up to fail. It was very easy for a business to say no, it's just not going to happen. So I think that's what we're going to be seeing, a shift on the other side, and that partners with the big drive that we were pushing forward pre-lockdown, before we were working in the context of a pandemic and trying to repackage Peppa Pig as Key Stage 2 English. But we formed a coalition called Flex for All with TUC, Fawcett Society, the Fatherhood Institute, to ensure that it wasn't pegged to women's shoulders. This is not about mummies wanting to see more of their Weetabix smattered children. And I think that was put forward, the first reading went through Parliament with Helen Whateley, the MP, and that was to make flexible working available for everyone from day one. So I think we're looking at a really different working landscape post-lockdown.
I think it's interesting, though, Anna, because obviously the law before talked about everyone had the right to request flexible working. But of course, every company had the right to decline that request. So that is a monumental shift in terms of how we might think about flexible working in the future.
100%. We were sort of tap dancing around. You'd have this exchange with HR where you would put your flexible working request in. It would then get declined because it was set up to fail. And so, yes, a lot of companies could say we are a flexible working company. We are family friendly. We are this, we are that. But actually, the reality of it was a PR puff piece. What they were saying and what they were doing were two completely different things. A lot of people, the subtext is, well, won't everybody be sitting in their undercrackers watching Homes Under the Hammer? And you're like, well, no, that person will probably be stalking their ex.
I was going to say, it's not like you can't shirk in an office, is it?
It's no, you know, it's not, they're not comparable. That's a recruitment issue. Yeah. So I think what we're really going to be seeing is companies looking at what people are doing, not where they're sitting. And I really pray post lockdown that 26 weeks where you have to earn the right to even ask, to deign to ask for it, is scrapped and we go for flexibility from day one for everyone.
What evidence have you discovered and what do you think our offices and businesses of the future will look like?
So I think there's a really interesting quote from Douglas Copeland. He said, "I truly believe we will see that it is barbaric that actually strapping humans to a designated slab of MDF under a strip light and owning them, there's no relationship. You're just owned. And when we did our TED talk, the whole core of it was just referencing battery hens versus free range hens. And the eggs they produce are better. It's actually, when you look at it, when you cage people, animals, they aren't operating as well as if you allow them to own their own time. You remove such a weight of stress. So, but quickly answering your question about where the future sits, we're not going to break down the 9-to-5. We're simply giving choice to people within the 9-to-5. And my biggest fear is overproductivity. That's where I feel like we need to move the conversation. We know flexible working works. That's a conversation from 5 years ago. What we need to look towards is how to stop people burning out, how to help people switch off, how to create boundaries in their day. BT implemented flexible working. They're like, it was great. We were up 30%. But then at the end of that month, people were burning out because they just didn't
stop. Felt they had to prove to them, to people, that actually they weren't shirking, because there's so much kind of stigma around flexible working from home. And actually, I think a lot of people will talk about that now. I mean, we started this conversation by talking about your day. We're not in a dream situation at the moment. And people are also overcompensating around that to either fight for their business or to prove that they're pulling their weight.
It's the over-emailing just to prove that you are there.
Yeah, visibility, yeah.
And that comes down to just unlearning and deconstructing this, you know, structure that we've been in since the Industrial Revolution.
It really is. Fabulous. My final question then for you, Anna, is obviously we've talked about people who might be experiencing their working from home life during some tricky conditions. Prior to this, how did you make it work for you? What would be your best tips for anyone who is flexible working in the future?
So I think I'm probably the worst poster girl for flexible working because I love the 9-to-5. I love structure, and I haven't had it for 3 years. So, you know, I think I really want to stress that this isn't about just release everyone into the wild. Often you're just talking about 15 minutes either side of your day, or just somebody not feeling owned. It's a mindset shift more than maybe a physical shift. But so I was burning out, I would say, pre-pandemic, playing into that overproductivity narrative. And what I have found is that now I'm finding tools, I'm learning how to work without boundaries. And that comes from simply putting an out of office on when I am caring for my children. And like Robert Reitbrook, the CEO for PepsiCo in New Zealand, they get a lot right, New Zealanders.
It's just down to Jacinta, come on.
It's just Jacinta just gets it all right. And
cue mass exodus to New Zealand, yeah.
I know, it's like, let me in. You seem to just have somebody who knows what they're doing at the helm. So Robert Reitbrook, he implemented a leaving loudly policy. So simply, you would say, I'm off to pick up my kids, or I'm off to play basketball, and own leaving the building, whether you're online or offline. And that has been a really big mindset shift, is there is no shame in living outside of work. And it takes people at the top to own that. Because if you don't own it as a manager, it will trickle down to everyone else. You're owning their time. So show that it is okay to have a child, that it is okay to go and enjoy a basketball game. That has helped, because when I'm working now, I am working. And when I'm not, I have an out of office that simply says, and it's quite a human out of office, just saying, I'm putting the kids to bed. If you don't own your boundaries, no one else will. The other thing that's helped is if you are freelance, is finding people within your industry that you can communicate with. So remoteworkmates.com is a great site to go to. It's basically like, it's freelance Tinder without the sexual subtext. It's the only way I can describe it.
It's a lovely description.
It replaces the water cooler chat that you maybe miss out on, the social side of it, which I think a lot of people right now are pining for.
Really struggling,
And, you know, I think those two simple things, what you'll find is moving forward to the future of flexible working, is that there will be something in the middle, a middle ground, where people ebb and flow within work and home, with trust at the core of it, tech to facilitate it, and measuring what they're doing, not where they're sitting. That's the utopia. And actually, that's not for the employee. That's for the employer.
I think what's so funny listening to Anna is that you can almost see in the future that in 5-10 years from now, when people look back at how we used to work pre-corona, that we would all cram our sweaty bodies onto a tube in the morning and that we would all go to the local Pret for lunch. I do love Pret. This is certainly not criticising them. I miss them. But, you know, we would all go to the same lunch place and we would all leave at exactly the same time. I think everyone would be like, what were you thinking? What a bizarre way to work. It feels really, really outdated. And I genuinely hope that this will start a far more modern, far more life-friendly approach to working.
Absolutely. You can find out more from Anna at motherpucker.co.uk, or you can follow her on Instagram, Twitter, and all the lovely socials as Mother Pucker. She also has a brand new book out, which she's written with her husband, Matt Farquharson, Where's My Happy Ending? And you can get that now from all good bookshops. And don't forget, if you are missing the water cooler chat, we also have our very own Facebook group to go with this podcast. So just search for Working From Home with Stylists within Facebook. Alex, I think we're probably in a bit of a nurturing frame of mind because we decided that we wanted to spend some time today looking at self-discovery podcasts and really sort of finding out how we can use our entertainment time to look after ourselves a bit more.
Yeah, something that's really struck me during this period is how when people say to you, how are you, which is something that they would say every day, 20 times a day, you'd be asked that question before corona. But now, when you're asked that question, people really take the time to listen to the answer and they expect you to answer really truthfully. And I found myself having really honest conversations with people really quickly. Not, you know, I don't have to have had a few drinks and, you know, having a deep and meaningful. Every time I speak to a friend or colleague, we're really honest about how we're feeling and it's been a really nice discovery.
I think that's so interesting because actually I don't know when I last said fine to someone, which would normally be my acme response. I wouldn't even think about it. It was just a sort of pleasantry and then cut to the chase. But actually, I don't think, you know, you sort of talk about what you're doing and how you're coping and actually you're prepared to share your feelings as well, which is fascinating. I think I've always enjoyed podcasts that take people on a bit of a journey and share people's individual stories. And for me, that's what self-discovery podcasts do. And I think now we're really interested in other people, like you say, at the moment. And, you know, our everyday heroes and people who, how do you tackle problems? And I think there are a wealth of podcasts out there, but navigating them is quite hard. So we asked a host of one of those podcasts, Katie Piper, for her recommendations. Now, Katie has had a podcast since 2018 called Extraordinary People. And in that, she interviews people who've faced adversity in their lives and how they've turned that into positivity. So I was really keen to find out what other podcasts she listens to that we might enjoy too.
Hello, it's Katie Piper here for Stylist Magazine. And these are my top podcasts. Fern Cotton's Happy Place. She always has brilliant guests and it feels really intimate. She really gets the best from those guests. And, you know, it's a lot of life advice. My favourite episode recently was with Jada Pinkett Smith, who talked really openly and in depth about lots of important feminist issues. Similar to Fern's is Under the Skin, Russell Brand. Again, just like Fern, he has fantastic guests and he doesn't hold back, you know, with his questioning. He's not afraid to ask what you're thinking. And I feel like I really get to know people through his episodes. If it isn't too self-indulgent, I would like to say my own podcast, which is called Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. And I suppose selfishly, I picked my own because I love getting to meet my heroes. You know, my podcast is all about people that had faced adversity and overcome it. They share how they did it. They share their advice, their tips, their mantras, but it's not fluffy. It's not all about people with a happy ending. It's about people that had to create a new normal. Number four is Rob Moore, the disruptive entrepreneur. So Rob's this amazing billionaire who's made all his money through being self-made through property. And his podcast gives advice on business, how to create passive income streams, multiple income streams, and he interviews all types of different people that really inspire me professionally. So I hope you enjoyed my self-care podcast recommendations.
I've not actually listened to any of those podcasts, but the one that stands out to me is The Disruptive Entrepreneur. That's from businessman Rob Moore, mainly because one of his topics is interviewing an extremely successful entrepreneur about why being lazy is the key to success, which I'm really into right now.
it's the dream, isn't it? Yes.
That works.
I came up with this multi-million pound business while lying on my sofa.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll take that.
I am a big fan of both Fern and Russell's podcast. I've listened to quite a few of those and I would absolutely 100% back those too. Actually, Russell interviews Fern if you want a fully kind of meta experience here.
I love Russell Brand. Love him.
He has an amazing ability to ask the questions either other people don't think of or dare to ask. And I think that's what makes his interview so fascinating. So definitely top of my list, I would say.
Do you know what as well? I would like to be interviewed by Russell Brand.
To find out about yourself?
Yeah, I feel like him interviewing me would reveal things about myself that I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe there's no extra layers to me. But if there were,
you would
Russell
have
would
to brace yourself for that. I'm not sure. He's very unnerving. Russell actually attended Stylist Live a few years ago, and he is one of the most intense men that you just feel like, I'm just going to talk to you a lot. I'm just saying lots and lots of things, and I really wish I could stop talking now. He has an amazing intense ability, and he'll just stare at you and look you in the eye.
That's so, why you'd be so good.
I mean, it's absolutely his charm and how he gets people to share so much, I think. Fascinating man. Find him absolutely fascinating. And I think a brilliant podcast that everyone should listen to. Thank you again to Katie. You can find her podcast, Extraordinary People, on all the main podcast stores. And more about the work that she does at the katiepiperfoundation.org.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I want to talk energy again now. I am struggling with my energy levels at the moment. And for the first time during lockdown, I had a nap at 5:30 the other day because I was like, I definitely can't get through the evening unless I have a little power nap. And I genuinely fell asleep. And this is so abnormal for me. But I can definitely tell that I'm experiencing these big lulls in energy throughout the day.
I will say that you are by far the most energetic human being I have ever met in my entire life. So much so that I have suggested that we've done features that actually test your energy levels because I've never met anybody who can go through an entire day of work, a massive night out, and then be up at six the next morning with a seemingly no hangover, it's quite something. So for you to say that you're lagging in energy and actually had a nap, well, it's floored me. If I wasn't already on the floor from my extreme lack of energy myself, I am next level lethargic.
Mm.
It's not even extreme tiredness through the day. It's more just this lethargic, sloth-like nature where I could just roll from place to place. It's really strange for me because actually, although I can never say I've got as much energy as Lisa, I, from 6 a.m. till probably 7 o'clock at night, I don't stop. I love doing stuff. I very, very rarely sit down in between those hours. But now all I want to do is be vertical on my own with a large blanket on me. I have just got no energy to do anything and it's really freaking me out.
I mean, I'm a big believer that energy breeds energy. So the more you do, the more energized you feel. And that's certainly the rule that I apply to my life normally. So I guess it makes sense that conversely, whilst we're in lockdown, we're feeling that lack of energy. And I guess it's like that saying, isn't it? If you want something doing, ask a busy woman, because we have the ability to just take on and do so much. But our digital team were all complaining about the fact that actually they were going to bed at 9:30 every night, which was, you know, abnormal behaviour because they were just feeling so worn out and exhausted by their working day, or, you know, and that their patterns were fairly normal in the sense that they're getting up at the same time, doing a full working day, but they just didn't have the energy to get through. And I think some people are manifesting that as a lack of physical energy, some as a lack of psychological energy, and some as a bit just a lack of mojo, a bit of, yeah, lack of motivation.
I think you can even see it if you look on social channels at the minute. The first few weeks, everybody was cleaning and baking and, you know, really going all out in their Zoom quizzes. And I feel like now there's a massive slide in that, and the majority of people are just sat on the sofa watching Netflix, wishing that they could order a takeaway, because who the hell's got the energy to cook anymore?
One of the articles that I stumbled across is actually an old one on our own website, on stylist.co.uk, because we are fairly sleep and energy obsessed on our website. It's such a big issue in normal life. But one of the things that really stood out to me in that article is that at the moment, we're not using our muscles in the same way, and that's having a massive impact on our energy levels. So usually we move, it's causing our bodies to expend energy, whereas at the moment we're storing it. So our bodies, you know, we're eating a similar or maybe more, but we're moving less and we're storing this energy. And actually it makes us feel a bit slothish and a bit achy, but just moving resolves this. So we've talked about this now on a few episodes, but actually just the process of movement, breaking up our day with lots of small exercises, whether that's moving around your house or whether that's going for a walk, but not sitting still all the time. And I know that's true of me. I feel like a massive potato a lot of the time, where I just haven't moved from my desk, or, you know, I've moved from one room to another, but I've not used my body properly and in the same way that I would do normally.
I do think of you like a potato a lot.
I mean, yes, yes, that is my spirit vegetable.
I am spending an inordinate amount of time looking at a screen. And I think every single bit of research I've ever done for any sleep article has talked about the effect of that screen time on our brains. I believe it's called a hypnagogic state.
I love that word.
Say it again.
It's really lovely. Hypnagogic.
Basically, like a daytime dream state where our minds wander and they just can't focus and we just feel exhausted. And that is so true of me. And it's made me realise I'm going to have to start going out and leaving my phone behind.
Definitely. It's terrible that you're on your phone while you're out walking. You're definitely doing bad whilst doing good. I'm giving you no leeway on that. No taking your phone on walks.
Yeah, it's not even like loads of people are trying to get in contact with me, to be honest.
Just so popular.
My chat's terrible at the minute. I'm tired of you. Yeah. No, can't blame that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And I think definitely too much screen use will be, as we talked about before, something everyone's guilty of. I also was really fascinated by the fact that too much sleep is causing us some massive lulls in energy. It seems ironic, obviously, that the more we sleep, the less awake we feel. But obviously, our natural circadian rhythms are all about kind of light, and they're really kicked in by getting up at the morning at the same time. And actually, one of the things actually we discovered in the Stylist Restful is Dr. Narina talked about how the sleep before midnight was the most valuable. So for someone like me, who's going to bed often now at like 12, half 12, I'm losing all the valuable sleep, which is actually where a lot of your brain recovery happens. So actually, I think that and the combination of then having more lions and things is causing sleep inertia, which is really affecting our energy levels.
Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of that as well. A lot more late nights for me.
Mm, you are definitely a lark, not an owl as a rule, aren't you?
Yes, I really am. And I have to say that is partly children related. My devilish middle child decided very early on that 5 a.m. was her wake-up time, so I have had to completely retrain my body. So yes, whilst I would call myself a lark, I can't pretend it is a lark of my choosing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, despite the fact that I am an owl, I had to force myself to get up earlier and earlier, and stylists did that to me. There were so many meetings when we launched that were like at 8 or 8:30 a.m. which were obscene and hideous. But I think culturally we've moved into more breakfast meetings, we've changed the patterns of our day, so I've had that forced upon me. But whenever left to my own devices, I stay up late and I would sleep in for hours. And I feel a bit teenage actually in how I'm sleeping at the moment. That definitely is a shift in my pattern, and that's definitely affecting my energy. I think it probably would be remiss to not discuss the impact of the psychology of this situation going on at the moment, because boredom doesn't energize us, does it? It has the absolute reverse effect. And I think both you and I have talked about being bored this week, just bored of everything. I'm just bored of everything.
Literally everything. I am bored of my drony old voice. I'm bored of talking about being bored. Yeah, I'm bored of pretending now. I'm going to be honest, I am bored. Being bored makes you just want to go to sleep. I'm craving some stimulation. I'm craving some different people to talk to. I'm craving some different lights and smells and sounds, and ideally an aeroplane that's going to take me to a different place.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even hear aeroplanes at the moment. It's bizarre. When I looked into some research on this subject, monotony, boredom can make us feel tired. And obviously trying to break that to find things that stimulate us is definitely beneficial. And of course, stress and anxiety have a huge impact on our energy levels. Obviously, some of that's about poor sleep quality, but there's also about distraction, about how we focus, about how our mind stays focused on one particular activity at the time. And I think all of what's interesting is all the advice for all of the reasons is kind of the same. So whether this is a physical fatigue or energy loss that you're having, or a psychological one, all the advice seems to be move more, get outside more, try and keep to a routine, like getting up at the same time, going to bed at the same time, and setting yourself some small goals, small wins to have throughout the day. And that can be things that excite you, or it can be things that just make you feel better about yourself, or that you've kind of achieved in terms of work or a personal hobby. But actually, the advice continually suggests that we should be doing all of those things.
It's true. And it's like, you don't really want to hear it. You want to hear that there's a magic pill and that magic pill's suddenly going to change everything.
But I mean, nobody ever wants to hear that actually you've just got to do your exercise and eat your greens. It's basically that, isn't it?
That is the other big bit of advice. And something that I am trying to change is just to eat healthier. You know, we've all, well, I've certainly turned much more to sugar and snacking, largely out of boredom. So I am trying to make a real effort to go back to, and they're all actually foods that I really like. I'm trying to have avocados or protein at lunch. I'm having a sweet potato rather than a giant jacket potato. I am trying to add much more protein to my diet, because I do know that I lack that quite a lot. And just to try as much as I can, although, you know, I'm not a saint in any way.
So hard, isn't it?
Yeah, to stay away from sugar. The other thing, and I do think it's worth mentioning, is that so many people in the Northern Hemisphere are quite deficient in vitamin D by this point. Obviously, we've just come out of winter, hadn't had any sunshine, and I think it can be a real issue for loads of people. I've been tested and been really deficient in the past, so I am going to pop to the doctors actually and just check my levels again. But it is worth thinking about for anybody who is feeling really low in energy. And I do also want to stress actually that if you are feeling extremely low in energy, that it is always worth getting it checked out in the doctors anyway, just to see whether or not there might be any other issues that need tackling.
I think that's super important, actually, because of course there can be lots of medical reasons for our energy, but there are also lots of things we can definitely do to help ourselves during this period where we are not living our completely normal lives. And if you want any more advice, we've got lots of great articles on stylist.co.uk which will help you get your energy back.
Earlier this week, I got to speak to the very lovely author Maggie O'Farrell, who's written so many novels that we're such fans of in the Stylist office.
I love, absolutely love The Hand That First Held Mine, which was out in 2010. And the reason why it has stuck in my brain so much is that it's about a woman who has a baby, and it's quite harrowing, actually. But I read it whilst I was just before I had a baby and during my first maternity leave. And every inch of that story, I mean, she creates amazing atmosphere in all of her stories, and it sort of makes you feel like you are there and you can feel all the emotions of the characters. I think she's incredible at doing that. But there's something so visceral about that experience, because this woman can't remember the birth. And then I read this just before I was about to give birth, and it just stuck with me. But it's a really powerful, incredible story. And I think, God, she's written so many amazing award-winning books.
Maggie is somebody who has worked at home for a long time. So I was really interested what we could learn from her. Here is what she had to say. So if you could start by telling me a little bit about what your working day looks like right now.
Well, my working day right now is a little bit up in the air. At the moment, because I mean the thing about writers are we're so used to working from home. It's what we've been doing for a long time. Mm-hmm. But what we're not used to is having all three kids at home all the time and being kind of a teacher, and actually this week a nurse as well, I think, because my son had a bike accident. I mean, he's fine. Gosh. But he came off his bike, and he hasn't broken anything, but there's been a lot of he's basically removed quite a lot of his skin. It's funny. So, you never know what to expect with parenting, as I'm sure lots of people know. You kind of think there are days when you think, okay, great, I've got 3 hours to work, and then something happens, someone falls out of a tree, someone has a bike accident, suddenly there's no food in the house, which is the biggest crisis, especially when they're teenagers. So it's just all a little bit, we're all just flying by the seat of our pants, actually. Well, I think the whole world is actually at the moment.
Obviously, writing's quite it's a really dedicated, you've got to be very, concentrated and in the moment when you're writing. How easy do you find that?
Well, it's funny, I don't really have to be disciplined to write, because mm-hmm. That's always what I really want to do. I have to be disciplined to do my tax return.
I think that's true of anybody.
That had to be disciplined by it, because I'm not, that's not my natural state. So no, I've never really had a problem, getting myself to sit down and write. I'm used to writing now with young kids, and you always kind of, I've been writing around the edges of things. When I wrote my first book, when I was in my mid-late 20s, I was working full time as a journalist, so I wrote that book in the evenings and at weekends. And in a sense, that was really good training, I think, for the rest of life, because, I think writing is something that you do around the edges, and that kind of suits me in a way. There is the school of thought that you can't write and have kids, that every baby costs you a book. There's all these kind of terrible sort of sayings of doom that you'll never be able to have a creative life and a domestic life. But I really don't think that's true. I've never found it's true. And I think it's just one of those ways that the establishment has tried to keep particularly women down and women creating. Mm. Because, I mean, obviously, I have, my husband helps out, with the childcare. We'd share it between us, and that helps. But it isn't impossible, and I do find them quite complementary in a way. I use one to sort of sustain the other. Always having that feeling of not quite having enough time, of always chasing your tail, is actually quite good for you, because it makes you really concentrate and really focus in the narrow amounts of time that you do have. And you use them like nothing else.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to tell me a little bit about what your working day looked like when you were writing this new book? Did you just sit there at your computer and go, or do you have a lot of structured breaks?
Every book has very different phases, and I think the beginning phase is often the hardest. Mm-hmm. I think when you're starting something, that's the point at which you're kind of most nervous and you're not very sure of your footing. Mm-hmm. So I find actually when I'm trying to start something, which I am at the moment actually, mm-hmm. I'm starting a new book right now, I say to myself, I go and sit there and I say to myself, I'm going to just do this for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And, even if I only write a sentence, I'm going to stay here for an hour and I'm not going to do anything else. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go away. I'm not going to check my email. I'm not going to see if my auctions on eBay are going okay. None of that. I will do that. And I think, you know, structuring and dedicating just 1 hour of your time like that, it is actually quite effective. And then obviously if it's going well, you can stay there for longer.
And is that something that means that you sometimes just keep writing into the night, or do you tend to have quite a disciplined working day?
It isn't really disciplined. I mean, I wouldn't say it's disciplined, because I'm not very structured or very organised, and I don't, you know, no 2 days will look the same. I mean, I used to actually write in the evening, particularly when I had my son, when he was quite young. But actually... These days, I'm actually so knackered by the evenings.
There is no evening for you. Tell me a little bit about your workspace. What does your work home office look like and feel like?
It's a little kind of box room where I keep everything, and this is where I have my desktop computer.
And do you tend to keep quite a neat workspace, or do you have, like me, if you could see around here, notes and post-its and everything everywhere?
Well, actually, what I do is I have two desks and I have two computers, which sounds a bit indulgent. But so I have one desk where I do all my admin, and that has my desktop on it. And that is, as you can see, probably is really messy. It's covered in, I don't know, sellotape. Someone's left a pot of yogurt here, which wasn't me, it's one of my kids. There's kind of lipsticks, a lot of hair clips because my hair really annoys me. So I tip them, and glasses, scissors, everything is on this desk. And then in the corner there's another desk which is absolutely totally empty, and that's where I put my laptop. So I have a laptop which I actually write my books on, and that has no connectivity at all. It has no email, no internet, nothing. So
that's smart, actually.
So yeah, and I don't know, it's just one of those things, and it really works for me. And actually the laptop I write on is 12 years old. I bought it before my daughter was born, so yeah. But it's just perfect for what I need, so I just write on it and nothing else.
That's a really smart idea, actually. I think I need to copy that, because I'm so easily distracted. So for anybody who's working from home for the first time and finding it quite hard, what tips do you have for them as somebody who's well-versed in this way of working?
Well, I think ring-fencing your time is very good. And I think, you know, sort of in a sense, just putting a boundary around something and saying, as I was talking about, you know, saying I'm going to sit here for an hour, break it up into quite bite-sized pieces, because you can't, I mean, the thing sitting here thinking I'm going to sit down for 3 hours now, it's not very helpful. You've got to be kind to yourself and think, well, I can manage half an hour, I can manage an hour, but in that hour or that half hour, whatever it is you ring fence, you have to completely concentrate and not distract yourself. And if necessary, pull the router out of the wall, if you need to do that, or put your phone in another room, switch off everything. And there are lots of there's lots of software you can have that stops. You know, there's one which I use called Freedom sometimes, which is actually really handy. But I think you just have to make sure that your work time is sacrosanct. And then actually when you have worked completely concentratedly for your allotted time, half an hour, you feel really great. And then you can go outside and have a cup of tea in the sun.
I'm always fascinated by the lives of writers, because obviously it's such an insular career. You know, you're lost in your own brain and your own thoughts. So I'm always intrigued about the process and how people work, particularly as someone who loves talking so much. how stuck I would be, how harrowing it would be for me if I wasn't allowed to talk to people all day long. So I think, you know, I find that just incredible, and it's such focus.
You can read Maggie O'Farrell's latest novel, Hamnet, which is out now.
Now, on to matters of great importance. Alex, what are you eating, drinking and doing this week?
The most important matters, I would say, always.
Of course.
drinking. So I realised this Saturday, when my husband brought me a cocktail, I was doing a Zoom chat with some friends, how nice it was.
Aww, I mean, what love.
Let me finish this, because then you'll realise that there's a caveat. How nice it was for the first time that week for me to be the person that was given something and not asked for something in its complete package. And I was like, oh, it's such a treat, just because it is the only thing that somebody, sounds a really sob story, but it's the only thing someone does for me right now.
I know. I mean, I'd come round to make you a cocktail if I was allowed.
I know.
I would do that for you, Alex.
So I made him agree to make me a different cocktail every weekend. And I've sent in the recipe for the one I want next, which is from Bon Appetit's website. And it's a rhubarb daiquiri. And it looks so good. Rum and rhubarb.
Wow, that's quite an unusual combo, isn't
Works
it?
Works for me.
I mean, for me, rhubarb is only in custard and a boiled sweet.
Oh,
so, you
love
know.
Rhubarb and custard.
Oh, they're lovely. If it tastes like that, I'm in. I'm actually in the cocktail vibe as well, because I got sent a kit from the Mixology Brothers this week for a raspberry gimlet, and I tried it, and I think now this is what all I want to drink forever. And all that goes into it, this was fascinating, because they'd obviously made it as simple as possible for a novice like me to make. And it was jam, so a raspberry jam, which, you know, is surprising, pure lime juice and gin, sort of almost equal measures of gin and lime juice. So quite hardcore, a short drink, definitely, but that mixed very thoroughly over ice. And the jam sort of dissolves into the liquids. It's just so tasty. So I am definitely going to be making those. They're so easy. Took seconds to make. No faff.
Please bring one round to me.
I will.
Food-wise, I am really struggling with motivation to cook. I think that's just a continuation of my lack of energy right now. But also, I am desperate to go to a restaurant again. I miss restaurants so much. It's by far the first thing I want to do when this is over. I have this feeling inside, like I just want to say to all my favourite restaurants, please just hang on, because as soon as this is over, we are going to be beating the door down.
I just feel
it for them so much. I know that industry is going to be so heavily affected by this, and it really makes me sad. So because of that, I have bought a few restaurant vouchers for meals with friends. So it's like it supports the restaurant during this time. And two, it's a really lovely thing to look forward to. One of my favourite restaurants is Jaconi's, which is a kind of fusion of African, Asian and Middle Eastern food, lots of sharing plate situation. And it is so tasty, so good.
Yeah.
I really want them to still be there post all this. And that was, a little bit of support, I guess, for them.
I love that idea. I think it's an absolutely brilliant idea. And I'm definitely going to try and find some vouchers of my own, because I love the idea of supporting the places that we love in normal life. My recipe this week is actually something that I saw on our Stylist Loves email, but it actually comes from Sarah Rainey's new book, 6 Minute Showstoppers, and it is a frozen Nutella loaf cake, which sort of looks a bit like a cheesecake and just like a load of chocolate gooey joy. But it's a really simple recipe. It's on the Stylist website now. I mean, it looks filthy, but gorgeous.
Do it, Lisa.
I'm going to. And what are you doing? What have you got? What can I copy?
What am I doing? Not a lot. Come on. Not a lot, I'll be honest with you. However, I am desperate to get off of this Zoom call right now, because
charming.
I am really into, like everybody else, The Last Dance on Netflix, which is all about Michael Jordan's career. And it's so funny, isn't it, how something that doesn't necessarily strike you as being your area of interest, just when it's done well and it's an amazing human being with such an amazing backstory, is just enough to hook you so much. And that the soundtrack is excellent.
It's
really brilliant music the whole way through, which I do think plays a big part for me. Yeah. So I'm binge watching that like crazy at the minute.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch that. I'm planning to try a new podcast this week called History Becomes Her. And this is about women making change and then women who paved their way for them. And they have got some fantastic guests on this, including Jodi Kantor and Megan Twohey, who broke the Harvey Weinstein story originally in America.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa Tadeo, who's the author of Three Women, who I know you're a fan of.
Oh, I love that book. It is one of the most powerful books I have ever read,
which, you know, is praise indeed, I think, from anyone, Alex, but especially you.
It doesn't come lightly from me.
And then also some friends of stylists like Porna Bell and Charlie Brinkhurst cover on there as well. So it sounds like a really fascinating insight, because you're getting their role models and also you're learning more about their particular story. So I'm excited to listen to that as well. For more ideas on what to eat, drink and do during lockdown, you can subscribe to Stylist Loves at stylist.co.uk/emails. You'll also find all of our recommendations in the show notes in the podcast store and on our website, stylist.co.uk. And please remember to leave your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to hear more of in the podcast store too.
And don't forget to subscribe to this series to make sure you don't miss next week's episode, when we'll be talking to Dr. Narina Ramlakhan, sleep expert, on how you can get a good night's sleep during this period.
Thanks so much for listening to Working From Home with Stylist.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.